The Hawk is on the air, broadcasting 24/7 from the top of the Niagara Escarpment.
This is Hamilton's Alternative, 101.5, The Hawk FM.
Say, Captain, say, some tears. I can't cry them anymore. I can't think of what they're for. Oh, they ruin me every time. But I'll try. Leave behind some days. These tears just can't erase. I don't need them anymore.
Change the world. say why.
Listen to The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
Lo so che è difficile, ma se tu fai così diventa ancora più difficile.
Listening to Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk. My name is Mary, and tonight my guest is Carly Akins. Carly is a Canadian vocalist whose work and collaborations with bands and artists spans two decades. She's a former member of the Colorado-based band Paperbird, whose self-titled record was produced by John Oates of the famous Hall & Oates. She is a member of the Toronto supergroup Dwayne Gretzky and is also known for her work with Juno Award winner Bahamas. She has appeared as a member of the live lineup for artists such as Jack Johnson, Macy Gray, Royal Wood, Patrick Watson, The Head and the Heart, Dan Mangan, Donovan Woods, The Weather Station, and more. Her career has led her to sharing stages and shows with legendary artists such as Neil Young, Willie Nelson, Robert Plant, Hall & Oates, and the Rolling Stones, on world stages such as the Royal Albert Hall, Red Rocks, the Ryman, the Fillmore, Massey Hall, Roy Thompson, and more. She's currently working on her debut solo release, a soul pop collaboration with Marcus Peckin of the National and Arcade Fire production fame, Don Kerr, who's known for Bahamas and Ron Sexsmith, Brad Barr of the Barr Brothers, and Evan Teague of Patrick Watson. So let's welcome her to the show. So welcome, Carly. Thank you for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
So it's actually hilarious because you're such a busy musician. I'm snagging an hour from you before you head off into a studio session. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, of course. It's been, slowly getting back into the studio work. We wear our masks and we isolate in different rooms. So it feels a bit weird, but people are trying to make it work for sure.
Awesome. So I'm going to start off with a beautiful quote that I read about you, and it's from someone named Dan Mangan. He's an artist. He's on Arts and Crafts Records, and I think it kind of sums up how I know so many people feel about you. So he says, "Every musician I know owes Carly a favor. We'd cross paths at a summer festival or five. She'd sing in a band that was performing or three. Never stage center, it didn't matter. She would inevitably end up the focal point. It was never her name on the badge around her neck, but everybody knew her and she knew everybody. Carly was my favorite part of every band. She didn't lead on or off the stage. She's a magnet. It turned out she'd been writing songs this whole time, making wildly creative demos. She was stockpiling ideas, like a student who takes a decade to complete a dissertation that revolutionizes their field. Watching Carly sing makes me feel like a teenager. Does it feel like a musician friend trying to have a go? It feels like an action for the sake of the action. It feels like joy." So I think I'm going to start off the show with a song of yours off your upcoming album, and it's called Letting You Go.
Whoa.
Aikens singing her song Letting You Go. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk, and today I'm Mary and I'm joined by Carly Aikens. So Carly, that's a beautiful song we just heard of yours. I know that you were a recipient of the Canada Council for the Arts recording grant, and that you made this album. It was produced by Marcus Packin, who's worked with Arcade Fire, The National, with Don Kerr, who's known for Ron Sexsmith, Bahamas, members of the Barr Brothers, Patrick Watson, Zeus, and more. So how long have you been writing the songs that that appear on this upcoming album? And what was kind of the process like of turning those songs into a complete album?
Well, just to preface all of that, these songs are not yet released, so this is a special sneak preview. No one's ever heard them before except for the like 20 of my close friends who I send all my demos to, including you, Mare. So thank you for playing these. So yeah, just to let everyone know, these aren't released yet, so it's a big sneak peek into a process that's been almost a couple years now. I mean, really, it's been kind of a lifelong process, because this is my first kind of solo endeavor. I've worked as a collaborator and a vocalist and a band member, but this is my first foray into, like, this is me, these are my songs. That particular song, Letting You Go, was actually written by, it wasn't written by me, but it was written for me by my ex-band member from a band called Paper Bird that I was a part of. So Jenny Patterson wrote that for me when I joined the band, you know, I don't know, that was like 5 years ago now, because I was replacing another member, and they were, because it's three women who lead the band, they were trying to create songs that I could contribute to the set that already existed. And so she wrote that song for me to sing, and we kind of worked it out and arranged it and made it what you just heard, over quite a few years of you know, trying out different arrangements and approaches to it. But apart from that, I mean, there's another co-write on the album with a woman called Laura Byrne, who's a part of a California band. Her project is called The Minor Birds. And then other than that, it's kind of just been songs that I've been demoing and working out myself in my little home studio for years now. And I've brought them to a lot of my talented friends, and they've helped me to arrange them and make them more realized. As you said, I worked with Marcus Paquin, so the process of that would be we'd go to Montreal and we'd kind of sit in his studio and do some pre-production and figure out how to better structure the songs, and then we go into the studio. But a lot of this album has been, it hasn't been like I'm used to, where it's like, you know, you have a band and you rehearse the songs for months and then you get into the studio and you just lay them all out. This has been more of like a piecework kind of collaboration with a lot of my friends, and we haven't all been in the same room at the same time, so it's been a lot of, you know, one session on one song we'll have a couple players, and then the next session would be with a different group of people in a different city. So it's been a lot of just that's maybe why the process has taken a little longer, but it's been certainly a new experience and really joyous to, like, you know, be able to collaborate with multiple people and bring different people's flares to each track.
Nice. And do you have a name for your new album, or are you still figuring that out?
I think I'm going to call it Junk Jewelry.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that just kind of represents, you know, a lot of these songs are little diamonds in the rough that I have been writing over the years and kind of never maybe had enough courage to share them or to really develop them further. And so to kind of take these rough kind of junky tunes that I made in my studio and turn them into a little bit of a treasure. I guess that's what that title kind of represents.
Awesome. And how many songs in total are going to be on the album?
I think we're going to come out with 9 in total. I like records to be, you know, people's attention spans are pretty frugal, if you will, these days. So we're trying to keep it, you know, under an hour. And there's lots of tunes. There's way more than 9, but I think that we're kind of getting to the point where we've got 9 solid ones that we wanna finish up. And yeah, that'll be the record.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing the sneak peek. I'm excited.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm excited for the whole album. So that's awesome.
Thanks.
I'm at the halfway mark down. Hill from here, is it a walk in the park? Getting on in years, I guess I'd better settle in case it gets no better at the halfway mark. I'm at the halfway mark. Don't worry about the reaper at my door. I've fallen and I can't get up off the floor. Agree birthdays anymore, not past the halfway mark. Oh, I'm at the halfway mark. You told me I looked pretty in the dark. You liked my shape, obligatory, won the mark. Boy of your age, do you think you could say?
That was Halfway Mark by Carly Akins on 101.5 FM The Hawk out of Hamilton, Ontario. Carly's joining us today to talk about music and her career playing in the arts. So Carly, a lot of people may have kind of, you know, your name kind of came on the world stage when you played in the band called Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And so with Bahamas, can you talk a little bit about the history of how you came to be in that band?
Afi, who Bahamas is Afi Yervanen, and I grew up together in a town just north of Toronto called Barrie, Ontario. And we grew up, you know, in a big music circle. As you said, on my album, there's a lot of from the band Zeus, a lot of players from that band are on my album, and I've known them since I was a wee little lass just trying to like insert myself into their jams, which Afi was a part of. You know, they some of those members, Mike O'Brien and Afi and Robbie Drake, formed a band called Passamino that backed up Jay Collette, and I was just kind of around for all of that, and we'd always been, you know, buddies and musical kind of collaborators. And Afi was touring with Feist as part of her full-time band, and in the interim was kind of developing these songs as Bahamas. He signed a deal with Jack Johnson's label in California, and well, originally his first record was put out on Novato Records, which my first band, which is called Fox Jaws, was also on that label. And so I heard the songs first through that, and Afi then asked me to come and start kind of working on a live lineup with myself and Felicity Williams singing backups and kind of acting as, you know, there was Jason Tate playing drums, Afi playing guitar, and then Felicity and I kind of rounded out the lineup and acted with our voices as instruments. And so we proceeded to, I was in the band for the cycle of the album Bar Chords, and then which Lost in the Light is on, which Felicity and I are featured on. And then Afi recorded a record called Bahamas is Afi with Don Kerr, who you mentioned I'm also working with on my record. And I sang on that. But we traveled all over the world and did a lot of amazing things. And I kind of got to cut my teeth alongside a very dear friend who I'd grown up with, and I've always been like the hugest fan of Afi's songwriting. So it was kind of like a surreal, amazing opportunity to get to go and have my first real taste of what it's like to like really extensively be on a tour cycle, you know, be sharing the stage with like your idols and getting to play all these amazing theaters and festivals. And so it was just a really important formative time for me to get to play alongside him and get to learn from his experiences. His like star was rising, you know. So it was just a childhood friendship that developed into a work relationship that I'm extremely grateful for.
That's awesome. So maybe we'll play a song now by Bahamas, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about some of those experiences.
Sure.
Lost in the light, I pray for the night to take me to. After so many words, still nothing's heard. Don't know what we should do. So if someone could see me now, let them see you. Was my greatest thrill when we just stood still. You let me hold your hand till I had my fill. Even counting sheep don't help me sleep. I just toss and turn right there beside you.
So if someone could help me now, they'd help you too. They'd help you too. See you through all the hard things we've all gotta do. 'Cause this life is long, and so you wouldn't be wrong. Free and free. Some awful things, and I take them back. If we would try again, just remember when, before we were lovers, I swear we were friends. So if someone could see me now, let them see you. Let them see you.
That was Bahamas on Dangerfield. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. I'm joined today by Carly Akins, who performed on that song we just heard. Carly, so we mentioned a little bit before the song that you had a lot of different experiences when you traveled the world playing with that band. So one of the things I know is that you appeared on both Conan O'Brien and the Colbert Report. Can you talk a little bit about what's the experience like playing a national TV show like that, especially just they're two legends pretty much. So
yeah, that was actually the last season of the Colbert Report, which I was like a diehard fan of that show, as many of us are or were. And the first late night appearance, yeah, was with Conan, and I'm like obsessed with Conan as well. So to me at that time, I guess it was probably like 2013 or 2014 or something. That was like the hugest possible thing you could do next to playing on like SNL or something to me, because I was just like obsessed with Conan. And that experience, you know, the first time you do it is always, of course, really special. And I remember, you know, my hometown of Barrie, all my friends being really excited and like showing the, having, you know, watch parties at the local bars and sending me videos of everyone watching it. And it was a really magical thing. But doing those shows is always a little strange. I mean, you have to get there at like 5 a.m. and then you sit around for hours and hours and hours of anticipation. And then they kind of just shuffle you out and you play one song and they're like, you can only do it once. If you really mess it up, then maybe you can have a second chance. But it's kind of like, you know, all this pressure building all day, and you're so excited and nervous, and you're waiting around, and then you go out, and it's kind of like you're out of your body, and you perform the song, and then it's over, and you've been there for like 14 hours. But, and you know, you see Conan like walking around at the Colbert Report. It was really cool, because it was such a small New York headquarters that they had, that Stephen was in the dressing room with us. They only have one dressing room, so he was kind of, that was more of like, whoa, you really get to like see the host. And we did that performance with Jack Johnson, and he's a huge fan of Jack, and he had been trying to get Jack on his show for years since the show had begun. And I think Jack always turned it down, because if you remember the original format, Colbert was always kind of blasting his guests a little bit. So I think Jack was pretty nervous to do it. But they had such an amazing rapport, because Colbert just loved him so much and was such a fan of his music. And their interview, I remember the staff watching it and saying, like, that was the best interview I think that Stephen's ever done with a musician. It kind of ended with them, like, taking Colbert pulling a small feather out of his pocket and then just blowing it up into the air. Like, that was how the interview ended. And we were just like, wow, amazing. He made fun of Jack's flip-flops a lot, you know, but that was a really special experience just because it's such a tiny studio. And so you're like right in there and you get to sit and watch the writers kind of do a run through of all the jokes and edit on the spot and change the graphics. Like, so you just really get to be submersed in their whole process. So that was like really magical for me.
That's really cool. And who was the guest when you played Conan, the other guest?
Charlize Theron was there, the most beautiful woman on earth. And she like sat on the couch with, like, it's the same, like the celebrity guest is kind of in the room there with you too, like weirdly waiting around for their time to go on. And so you just find yourself like sitting on a couch with a superstar and like talking about the weather and trying to like really trying to play it cool.
Oh man, that's neat. Mm-hmm. So you touched a little bit before on playing with the band Paperbird. Mm-hmm. And so that was when you lived in Denver. And I remember this time when you all of a sudden were going to Nashville to record with John Oates of Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Right.
How on earth did that happen?
I don't really know, but I remember when I first joined the band that there had been talk about that John was looking to collaborate with younger bands and to write. And we shared, I believe we shared an agent. And so they kind of just set us up to originally just write with John. And we lived out on this huge acreage up in Evergreen, just above like Morrison, where Red Rocks, that venue is. So we lived up in this canyon and this beautiful kind of ranch home, and we invited John to come there just to write with us and help us to collaborate on some songs. And so, of course, we were all like peeing in our pants, just sitting there like preparing tea for John Oates to come into our living room. And he's the nicest, most down-to-earth man. And we sat and kind of worked some songs, and at the end of it, he just kind of said, you know, I have this studio in Nashville that I work out of a lot. How would you guys like to come there and make a record with me? And we all just were like, oh, let's think about that. Yes, yes, please. But we didn't really know at the time, like, how we could make that work or how much it would cost or any of the details. And he just kind of was like, I'll sort that all out. Just get yourselves to Nashville and let's make a record. And so we got to do a couple sessions, like two stints of like a couple weeks at this incredible studio called Addiction Sound in Music Row, which is owned by Michael from Journey. And David Kalmuski runs it. He's a producer who's worked with every country star in Nashville. So it was just an incredible, one of the best experiences of my life for sure. Just getting to be in this really gorgeous studio, just totally isolated with two kind of legends of music there telling us all their stories of work. I mean, David Bowie died at the time when we were there, and John was talking a lot about his experiences being the first band to open for Bowie on his first American tour. Telling us all his Fleetwood Mac stories. And then all of the gear in the studio had such a rich history, like Janis Joplin, Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder. It was the original board that was in Sausalito that Rumors was recorded on. So we were just like kind of in a heavenly state the whole time working with these people and with all this great gear. It was an amazing experience.
That's incredible. So we're listening to Carly Akins right now, conversation with her on 101.5 FM. Carly, should we listen to a song by Paperbird then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, So take the money, take the fame, and take this poison, take back your name, and come the night time, take your things out of the closet. Here's your ring, and take my heart up off the floor and onto a shelf forevermore. Cause I don't want it, I don't want it, not with your footprints upon it. I don't want it, I don't want it, not with your footprints upon it. I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it.
Paper Bird on 101.5 FM The Hawk. I'm speaking with Carly Akins, who was a performer on that song. Carly, that band Paper Bird, I think, did you not tour the West Coast with Nathaniel Radcliffe and the Night Sweats with that band?
Yeah, Nathaniel's a very good brother from Denver, and yeah, we got to do a big East or West Coast tour that was, again, probably one of the best, funnest, greatest times of my life. It was such a blast. And it was right as Nathaniel's kind of fame was really ramping up with, you know, he had Son of a Bitch and everyone was singing along every night. We got to play the Fillmore in San Francisco a couple nights to finish it off. And yeah, I mean, all those guys are my very beloved friends, and it was just, it's always... That's the main treat of, you know, all the sacrifices we make being on tour all the time. If you can do it with people that you love, it makes such a difference.
Right, because I think I saw you at the amphitheater. I think was he on tour with, was it Raylan Baxter? And I'm pretty sure you came up and did some songs with Nathaniel, correct?
At the amphitheater, maybe. Oh, gosh, who knows? Yeah, I think, or was that... I think they were opening for Kings of Leon, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. It's all a blur, especially when you're hanging with those guys. No, just kidding. We keep it tight.
You know, I feel like I've seen you on so many different stages, like everywhere from Massey Hall definitely seen you at the amphitheater for something.
Yeah.
So I guess like when you're touring with, you're on tour with, you know, if you're on a long tour with a band, with one or two bands, how nice of a break is it to kind of get on the festival circuits a bit, where you can also see some other artists? What's that like?
Yeah, festivals are, I think, a highlight for everyone. You know, it represents like summer times here, and a lot of bands really route their touring around those festivals, so a lot of people are really working hard in between. But a lot of the summers I've been able to, you know, be either a backing vocalist for a band, or when Paper Bird was touring, we played all over all these little tiny like hidden festivals in America and all in all these kind of remote locations that I didn't even know about. But certainly like Canada has the best system in their folk festivals. Each province kind of has an amazing folk fest, and those festivals are very different, and it's been amazing to like see my American friends come and participate in those and to see how blown away they are about the difference in that. You know, in American festivals you kind of show up, you play your set, you're out of there. Folk fests in Canada have this very communal energy, and they're set up so that bands are doing workshops together, so you're constantly collaborating with different acts. You get to know all the different musicians, you get to play with them, and then you get to kind of celebrate backstage and have a big party, and that's really where, I mean, so many of my so many opportunities and relationships that I value so much have come out of just Canadian folk festivals and hanging out and getting to, you know, there'll be bands there that in America, if you're at a festival, they might be in their little corner in their, you know, trailer, and you're over on the other side. But when you get to, when you're kind of forced into these weird workshops, which not everyone loves them, and sometimes they totally flop, but I love them so much because you get to be on stage and share your talents with each other and really establish relationships with other artists. So that was all, that's always been my favorite part of the year, is getting to go play those festivals.
You have a favorite workshop? I'm thinking of some of the ones, great ones I've seen have been at, you know, like Guelph Hillside Festival, for example. I think a lot of the workshops end up being quite early in the day, correct?
Yes. I mean, that's the hard part, because you're celebrating pretty late into the night, and then you're like, all right. Like Winnipeg Folk, they have like, it's my favorite festival. They have so many workshops, and you're like, okay, I'm really tired, but I've got to go do these three workshops before my main set. So it is exhausting at times, but it's always fun.
Okay, so let's play a band or an artist that you have a fond memory of playing a festival with.
Oh my goodness, that's, well, I was gonna say one of my favorite workshops was when it was Bahamas, Blitz and Trapper, who are a Portland band who've since become dear friends, the Head and the Heart from Seattle, and the Barr Brothers from, of course, Montreal. And that was a really significant workshop for me because it really solidified some very long-term special relationships with all those bands. So we could play, I don't know, we could play, let's play a song by the Barr Brothers because we love them so much, Mary.
Let's do that. Perfect. Yeah.
Trying to put a fire out, but matches ain't gasoline.